Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
What is this, amateur hour?
Yeah, I ain't no Superman businessman like you. You know, I'm just an
amateur,
I suppose.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Do you remember the year 2012 in September? That's when amateur hour first began. Just two friends talking about the Chiefs. The team was awful. A lot's changed since 11 years ago. Now we have Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes. And oh yeah, we won a Super Bowl.
You're welcome.
It's almost time for amateur hour. It's almost time for amateur hour. It's almost time for amateur hour to start. Football and friendship and lots of fun, yeah. Football and friendship and lots of fun, yeah. Football and friendship and lots of fun, oh yeah.
Wow. Let's go!
Yeah! That's right, folks. The show's called Amateur Hour. I'm Ryan Scott Hall, and with me today is a man who, like Andy Reid, loves the taste of a good burger. It's His Darkness.
Ho-ho, sup?
Ho-ho, sup. Okay.
Or sup, ho-hos.
How do you feel about a ho-ho?
I love hoes.
Yeah.
Oh, the candy?
They're like it's like
they're okay. The Hostess, the little cakes.
Yeah.
They're okay. I ain't fucking with too many Hostess cakes. None of them are really. I'm not a Twinkie guy.
You a Little Debbie guy?
Nah. Oatmeal like cream pies. I was big on those when I was a kid.
Yeah. It's just cucumber sandwiches now only.
Cucumber and mustard sandwiches. Damn. I forgot about that.
You've been really preaching that on Twitter. This cucumber and honey mustard.
I'm gonna let the listeners in on a little secret. I actually throw turkey and cheese on there as well. It's not just a cucumber and mustard sandwich. That's for listeners knowledge only. But I always make the sandwich. I start it like that and then take the picture for whatever reason, start posting it.
The joy that you get out of the simple things. It's why
it just looks weird, like throwing mustard on some cucumbers. Like, what is this guy doing?
Yeah.
Man, cucumbers on any sandwich is always a must. Way better than lettuce every time. Put cucumbers on every sandwich.
It looks like you've gone with the English cucumber, the seedless, skinnier guy. Those are nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Are we talking cucumbers today?
It sounds like it. That's where we start, at least.
Just so people are aware, we don't have many notes today. So
yeah. You know, I look back at the last couple weeks, and I've been enjoying a little bit of break on Christmas vacation, and you know, this Seahawks game, like it was. I mean, it's a weird one, but they won handedly, and no notes. No notes.
No notes. Let me just say, let's get into it. I think, I mean, this kind of seemed like a nothing game. Like, there's not much to take away from it. Just like, kind of went out there, ho hum, kind of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I actually thought the game was very important for the defense, who's kind of finally flashing some signs. That was kind of the main point of discussion in our last podcast that we did together. And I was waiting to see some signs. Like, I need to see some confidence, some juice from this defense. Kept saying it. And we weren't getting it. We especially didn't get it against the Houston Texans until the very end when they had to rely on the defense to come out with the win. I mean, granted, the Texans' offense is nothing special, but just faced with a drive and they need to get only a field goal to win a game. And that would have been an embarrassing loss and a crushing loss because we'll dive into some playoff scenarios here, but the one seed is very important, and losing that game would have pretty much crushed our hopes of getting the one seed. So an important game to get the win, a terrible opponent, not very well played by the team, but then you need to pull it out. And at the end, the defense did it. And just having to do that, having to rely on the defense and having them come through, I thought gave them a good spark. And I thought they kind of needed that wake-up call. And I think a lot of fans were like, the Denver game was the wake-up call. That should have been a wake-up call. And I just don't think this team saw it the same way. I think they saw the Denver game like, we were kicking their ass. We stopped trying. They had a couple fluke plays and it got close, but they never really took it seriously. But the Houston game, that was a wake-up call. I mean, that was the worst team in the league, and it was way closer than it needed to be. And then the defense responds to that, winning the game for them the week before with that turnover at the end, and then comes out with their best game of the season. Pretty unquestioned, I think I'd say. I looked at the expected points added on Pro Football Reference, and it has it as number one of the season, with the Rams game as number two. But this is against a much better offense. I mean, the Rams was a team with a quarterback who couldn't throw the ball. This was a legit offense, although while they're trending down a little bit, it's still, you know, top 10 offense most of the league, at least top half. So no first downs in the first four drives for the defense, and only 3 points up until 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I thought the defense needed this game, and I thought they looked fantastic.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, Saturday's game, I just had family around and food, and I'm back and forth, and I'm just like not paying that close attention. And it seemed like, you know, the team was just kind of cruising. And I go and I look at these numbers, and I want you to kind of fill in some context for me.
Oh boy.
Because, you know, the Chiefs were outgained by Seattle on Sunday. The Seahawks certainly had the ball longer. They kind of dominated in time of possession. Neither team was good on third down. The Seahawks attempted 6 fourth downs. And I don't ever remember my family being like, oh, big fourth down stop, let alone tense situation. It's fourth down. And so I'm curious, you know, I see that a lot of people were saying the defense played well. I mean, they only gave up 10 points, and even without Lockett, Seattle's still been a pretty good offense throughout the year, rotating through different running backs, and then Kenny Walker finally kind of finding his feet. But I'm curious, like, what do you feel like the defense did? I mean, they had a couple sacks, they had an interception, but like, to hold Seattle to 10 points without, you know, putting Geno on his back 6 times or turning them over 2 or 3 times. What is it about the defense that made them improve?
Well, it's a tough call. I mean, I thought the pass rush did look more consistent than they have in other weeks. Really, I guess I'd just say situational defense. Like early on in the game, they had a tackle, you know, 1 yard shy of the sticks that forces a punt. How many times in the last 3 weeks have we seen a Chiefs player able to make a tackle right at the sticks and just kind of get plowed through and give up that first down? I mean, we've seen it, 6, 7, 8 times lately. Like, I mean, the Bengals game, the whole last drive was that. So I think situational stuff like that coming through, you know, an early 4th and 3, I think it's a pass batted down by George Karloftis is the play. It's just making the plays when they matter most, as opposed to what they're doing versus the Texans, when really, I think defense is okay versus the Texans. It was just penalty after penalty on third down. Like, in general, the defense played okay in that game against a bad offense. But they just, those penalties on third down, whether they like the calls or not, I mean, those are almost like turnovers. I mean, if you get a stop on third down and then they throw a flag, they take advantage of it, go down and score, that's essentially a turnover when you're looking at box score. So these plays are just incredibly important, and they had probably like 4 or 5 of those against the Texans. It was unreal. So now you're playing in this game. You know, you have a crew that's not calling it as closely in the secondary, so the coverage looks good. Pass rush, each of them coming through. I mean, Karloftis has had his best 2 wins of the season, his best 2 pass rush wins, his quickest wins in the last 2 weeks. So, like, since we've talked, we kind of flashed some concern about George Karlaftis. He's had his best two wins in these last 2 weeks. So just different guys like that. And then another guy that I want to get to here. I think he is the key to the defense at this point. And I think that's Willie Gay. So this week, they finally get away with the Darius Harrius snaps. He didn't see the field really at all on defense. But Willie Gay is just a guy, I feel like if he's playing well, then like our defense is playing well. Like they're kind of going to go when he goes. And I thought he's had a rough time the last couple, like last month or so when they've been pulling him off the field. So I don't know if those are connected. I don't know if he's been banged up. So I'm not sure what's going on there. But then the last couple weeks, I mean, he makes that pick six against Denver. That's a play that few players on the Chiefs can make. Like there's not many playmakers on the Chiefs defense. We've had this conversation numerous times. Willie Gay can be that guy. Like he has the skill set to make plays. And he's also kind of an emotional guy. So like once he's popping off, like the defense almost kind of like feeds off his energy. So Willie Gay actually earned the second highest grade of any Chief in this game. And I really just think he's like, whatever you want to call it, the X factor. Like I kind of feel like the defense is kind of going to go at his pace. Like they need Willie Gay out there flying around and making plays, however they can do that.
The way that you're talking about him, the first guy that came to mind for me was a guy like Devin White. You know, he's been a very much like an up and down player for Tampa, but like when they went on that run and ultimately beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl and he talked a lot of shit, he was playing his best football and he was playing very, very well.
And their defense was feeding off that energy.
And it's like Devin White is an imperfect player that's gotten a lot of crap, you know, when he doesn't play like that. And he may never play like that again. But Willie Gay has that in him. He has those really rare traits athletically. And he's flashed this ability to get after the quarterback, to make plays in the passing game, you know, and to get to places on the field with his speed that other guys can't. There's a lot that he brings to the table that they just don't have other guys that do those things. And so it's been weird. Like, you know, the Chiefs don't play in their base defense that much, but it's like they've been finding a way, apparently up until this last game against Seattle, to play four linebackers at a time in the NFL when linebackers have probably never been, you know, less valuable than they are now. And it's like, well, we really got to get Darius Harrius snaps.
Did Willie Gay miss some games?
Yeah, he had the suspension to start the year.
Oh, to start the year. Okay, keep talking. I'm gonna look at this.
I think he was suspended maybe after the first two games or something. And then he got 4 weeks or whatever, and they brought him back slowly. There's something to the we're not gonna, you know, put Willie Gay on the field for every single snap. To me, what it says, and this is just pure conjecture, but it seems like when Spags has done that in the past, like guys that we want to see more of and they're not playing, it's probably because he doesn't trust them in whatever situations. And don't get me wrong, there obviously could be a health factor. I mean, again, it was pure conjecture. But if we're just doing the math, it seems like it might be a trust issue as far as Spags is concerned.
He's not a perfect player, so I get it. I mean, yeah, he's probably making mistakes out there, and Spags just like, man, we cannot be having this. Right. And whether that's to try and teach him a lesson, to try and just, you know, get his mind right, kind of, you know, think back to, you know, sitting Derek Johnson for the first half of that season from Todd Haley, and that's kind of what turned his career around for whatever reason. It's like maybe he needed the wake-up call. I don't know if it's that or banged up or what, but like I don't know. I don't want to see Darius Harrius getting snaps in the playoffs. You know, he filled in fine. He's a fine backup. He's got a great nickname. Credit to him. But you know, Willie Gay's out there with the athleticism. I think you just have to live with the mistakes. And when it's an important game, I'd rather go down with him making mistakes than like having Darius Harris out there for no reason. So hopefully they've gotten that, you know, figured out, and now Willie Gay's back on track. It wasn't an injury, it was just the 4-game suspension. That's what else what happened right in their midseason. So it's kind of weird. So it's not really injury, at least not directly related to coming off an injury or anything. But it is a weird situation, and hopefully, you know, he figures out, because he's been kind of like one of my most disappointed players of this year. Like, I just expected him to be making a lot more plays, and, you know, missing 4 games in the middle of the season obviously hurts that. But since coming back, just not flashing. I thought the linebackers kind of getting picked on in those games where the defense was struggling. So he's just a guy that, however they can do it, got to get him rolling. Like, Bolton's the run stuffing guy, you know, kind of sitting in there in the middle, but he's not super athletic. Willie Gay coming out, the whole thing with him was like how athletic he was. He runs a 4.5 and he's got good size. Like, he needs to be flying around making plays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, to circle back to, you know, originally what you were saying about what was different with the defense, you know, particularly in the game against Seattle on Saturday. And it sounds to me like, at the very least, maybe the biggest difference is that they're wrapping guys up, you know, that they're finishing plays. And that has been a problem. But for Seattle to go 2 of 14 on third down, you know, that probably speaks to what you're saying, knowing that, like, there's got to be plays at the sticks, right? Or getting your hand on a ball, whether that's at the line of scrimmage or in the secondary. And I'll say, I mean, it's not Geno has been good this year, actually good, but he will put the ball up for grabs a couple times a game. And the quarterbacks in Houston are, but I do think that you've seen suddenly the last couple games, it's like Juan Thornhill's kind of woken up a little bit. And he's been around the ball. And I think that that's, you know, an improvement. I don't really know what this particular collection of talent, like what the ceiling is for that defense. But I don't think that it matters that much, because this team is built in the image of its quarterback and its head coach, and both of those guys are all offense. I think that ultimately with this defense, like, we can say that maybe they would be a little bit more dynamic with a great edge rusher, or like a veteran corner lockdown kind of guy, or a more playmaking safety or something. But I mean, ultimately, I think that right now, what that team probably needs to focus on, especially when you talk about like guys like Darius Harris getting snaps, just play your best players, Spags. Like, it's getting to crunch time. And I think you're hearing people kind of make the same comments on the other side of the ball with Sky Moore and Justin Watson, which we can get to in a minute. But there's a lot of different things that the team can do throughout the season. And some teams come out slow because they're trying different stuff, or they're trying to see exactly what sort of team they are. What are we good at? And the Spags defense has, you know, kind of over the last few years, we've seen it just get better as the season goes along, as he figures out the talent that he has and stuff. And I think that with 2 games left, I just want to see them, you know, be playing their best players and hopefully playing their best football. I think that there's not really any more time left here to be experimenting around, unless it's something that Andy drew up on a napkin that they want to try. That's about it. You are what you are at this point, I guess.
Well, and I mean, remember, this is kind of a long-standing complaint with Spags. I mean, going back to Ben Neiman and Daniel Sorensen, you know, Sorensen at least made some plays along the way, and got pretty bad towards the end. Sorensen had a pick this year or this week?
Oh, I think I heard someone say that, and
I hadn't heard a single thing about Sorensen all season. I kind of forgot he existed, and then he
not our problem anymore.
He had an interception. Whoa! But yeah, Ben Neiman was the big one. It's just like playing him over and over, which would have been over Willie Gay, I'm guessing. You know, maybe back to the Willie Gay trust issues there.
Yeah.
But Spags, you know, gonna play the guys that he trusts. You know, going back over the years, that's how he's gonna do it. So hopefully these guys can figure it out. Along those lines of playing their best player, something we've been watching and something that's kind of turned over this week is that Jalen Watson outsnapped
Joshua Williams.
Oh, I got Watkins in my notes. That's why I'm confused. Joshua Williams for cornerback 3. Jesus, the JWs are out of control. So that's kind of interesting because they were kind of trending closer and closer, and now it's actually Watson has passed him. So I still don't know what the plan is there. I would probably pick Watson still, but mostly just a trend to keep your eye on with those two and what they decide to do coming down the stretch. Do they stick with that idea going into the playoffs? I mean, we're getting close to important games here. They got two more games to kind of play around. Do they go into a playoff game switching these guys in and out? It seems like a weird strategy. Or do they have two games to pick someone and just ride with them for the playoffs?
I mean, I don't know. I think that they're looking at this at the defensive tackle spot too, because Colin Saunders is going to be back, and that means like, is Danny Shelton playing next week, or, you know, are they gonna, I don't know if Derek Nnadi, like, it's just constantly a numbers game for this team.
But D-line, you can at least, like, you're switching them in and out constantly. Like, lots of D-line are going to see snaps.
That's fair.
Switching corners is rare.
And it's happened 2 weeks in a row, right? Like, Joshua.
Oh, it's been 4 weeks in a row at least. They're kind of switching, okay. And it's getting closer and closer up until he actually passed him this week.
Okay. Well, I mean, so let me ask you this. If they've been rotating that corner spot and giving Snead and McDuffie most of the rest of the snaps.
They play every snap, yeah.
Right. I had heard that Snead, or at least the plan, was that Snead was going to travel with DK Metcalf.
He was, a little bit.
And
mostly, I guess.
So how do you feel about how that went? And is that something that you feel like they should continue to do? Because it means that McDuffie is playing in the slot. Like, that's the result of that, is McDuffie becomes a slot corner. Snead travels with the number one wide receiver or somebody. It might be the number two. However, that they is, decide they want to handle
it. It is interesting. I mean, they each kind of have different skill sets. Because, you know, you talk about Snead, he's almost like kind of like has some safety to him, like can like moonlight as a safety slash linebacker in the box almost. It's not something you want to do all the time, but he's, you know, better there than a traditional corner, or like opposed to McDuffie, who's just a small guy, but the traditional slot corner that you'd expect, you know, a shorter guy, but like good short area quickness, where he can guard those quick routes kind of thing. So that was interesting to see, because you'd think if they'd travel with anyone, it'd be McDuffie. So I don't know, because Snead's always playing that slot. I thought it went good, I guess. Metcalf got a little bit, but I don't think
he got volume. I think he had like 9 for 76 or something like that.
He had 9 targets, 7 catches for 81 yards. He had that touchdown in the back of the end zone that he almost got the second foot down, but didn't quite. So, you know, I mean, but DK is a good receiver. He's going to get his. It's just an interesting strategy to see, because, I mean, Spags, he's had some good corners over the years, and he has rarely chased guys. I remember them doing it against Cincinnati last year with Charvarius going up against Chase. He was following him around. But it's just something, I mean, that's something we've kind of been clamoring for a long time, and not something that he's always done. So just kind of playing around, I guess. I mean, it really was, without Lockett in there, that really was a one receiver kind of team. I mean, their second receiver is Laquan Treadwell or Marquise Goodwin, two of our favorites, two of our personal favorites, but not really prolific receivers. So really keen on one guy, but interesting that they choose Snead to do it over McDuffie. And it might just be a height thing, I guess, because you're putting McDuffie in a tough spot where he's giving up, 6 inches and 50 pounds probably.
Yeah. I mean, I do want to point out that I don't know if there are quarterbacks in the AFC, even with guys as good as, you know, Herbert or Allen or Burrow, that are all guaranteed to be in the playoff field. I don't know if any of those guys are at that level that somebody like Tom Brady or Peyton Manning used to be able to just find the bad corner on the field and crush you in that spot. I don't know if these AFC quarterbacks are equipped to do that.
I do think, I will say, I think Burrow was picking on Joshua Williams in that game.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, at the least they've had the opportunity to see that and can make an adjustment, you know, if that's how Spags reads it as well. But I like that we do have these young guys, but like, do you feel like any, I mean, is there a spot in that secondary or really on the defense? Is there a liability somewhere? Like, where, what's going to get that defense beat?
I think it's throwing over the middle of the field, taking advantage of the linebackers in coverage and the safeties. And then that third corner, I think, is where they'll be going. I think every important player, I remember in that Cincinnati game, they're like, okay, let's find the one-on-one with Joshua Williams, get him isolated, and then throw it to that guy. And it was T. Higgins most of the time. And his coverage wasn't even bad necessarily. It's not like he did a terrible job, but that is who they're going after. Mm-hmm. I think McDuffie is probably seen as the clear cut guy. I don't think teams are just going to like completely avoid him. I think he's seen as the best guy, and Snead can get beaten some. But I do think throwing over the middle of the field and then throwing at Joshua Williams or whoever that third corner is, I would assume they'll do the same thing to Watson if he gets in there as well. But I'd say those are the weaknesses.
Okay.
One closing thought on the defense. I just want to say, I think it's much more important right now for the defense to be showing out than the offense. Like, the offense didn't have a good game. It had, in terms of expected points added, it was the second worst game of the season from the offense. The Colts was number one. But we trust this offense. I mean, we know the important games. Mahomes is going to bring it. Andy's going to bring it. Kelsey's going to bring it. And the offense isn't the concern. The offense is not our concern, dude. The defense is what we need to get rolling and show some juice and pick up steam. So I'd much rather be winning these games right now, you know, 24-3 instead of 41-27 or something like that. Like, I'd much rather get the defense going, because I am not nervous at all about the offense turning it on. And really, I mean, the offense has been humming outside of, you know, turnovers the last 2 or 3 weeks. And then this week was not at their best. But not concerned about the offense coming off of that. That's why I think this game was important, because the defense showing that rather than winning the game high scoring, like I just said. And that's a much better sign for this team going into the playoffs.
Yeah, and I don't know how much you can learn about them against these final two opponents, unless they, you know, go out and really shut down two kind of bad teams. Certainly the Broncos are in disarray.
What happened?
Yeah, right. I do think you mentioned George. The quick wins. I saw the sack that he had on Saturday. I saw the batted pass. Actually, in fact, thanks to Ron Kopp Jr., I saw every snap that Karloff just played in a cut-up. And I watched it, and I was like, or I guess they were all the pure pass rushing snaps. And he lined up next to Frank a lot. Sometimes they're both shifted out, like they're on either shoulder of the offensive tackle. Sometimes George was more inside, and he played, you know, he got the sack off the other edge going against a right tackle. So he's playing all four positions along that defensive line. And to me, I think I want to say it was either Chris Jones or Joe Cullen, the defensive line coach, and they were talking about, like, what George is doing, the amount of snaps that he's playing and all the different positions that he's playing. And it was basically like, when I was a rookie, I couldn't get on the field. Like, I wasn't a starter. You know, Chris Jones says that about himself. Frank Clark says that about himself. Like, I did not start. I was not doing what George is doing my first year in the league. There are some things about Karlaftis that need improvement if he's going to be considered like a number one pass rusher for this team. But I think that what he's shown, and especially the fact that instead of hitting a rookie wall, that he's now looking better at the end of the season, it says a lot about the kid's work ethic and you know, his hunger to become a good player in this league. And look, I mean, the 4.5 sacks that he's managed, and I think all of them have come in the last – does he have 4 sacks in the last 5 games or something like that?
Something like that. He's on a streak, yeah.
He's playing well. I mean, that's nothing to slouch at. Like, rookies don't put up big sack numbers, period. It just doesn't really happen. The great Derek Thomas was like 8.5 or something as a rookie. So I think
almost nobody gets the double-digit sacks.
Yeah, as a rookie. And so I think that, like, we've certainly seen some good things from him. And I mean, I'm not just trying to blow smoke, but I'm actually like, I want to give Veach some flowers just for the way that they've kind of handled George this year. He puts this kid in a room with the likes of Frank Clark and Carlos Dunlap. And you know, for the way that Frank has been a disappointment based on the contract that he got, you know, Carlos Dunlap just hit 100 career sacks. Frank has probably got around 70 or so. I'm not sure on his total, like on his career total, it might be less than that. But I mean, Frank is a guy that has been an impactful player.
58.5.
I mean, he's whatever. He's a pro. And so I think that George has really probably learned a lot and he's grown a lot. I something that I do want to mention before we transition away from the defense, I was thinking about this the other day.
Are you going off George?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. If you got
George. One thing on George, I thought you were going to get to from Cop, is that one thing that he's been tracking throughout the season, he leads the NFL or tied for the lead in the NFL in batted balls. Mm-hmm. So like defensive line, get their hands up at the line, which can be huge plays. I mean, some gigantic plays. I mean, I think back in the Chiefs Super Bowl win, there's a play where the 49ers have somebody wide open and Chris Jones gets a hands up and bats the ball. And this is in the fourth quarter. And it's just like that play, man, he just doesn't get a hand up. Maybe they complete that because the receiver is wide open behind him and changes the whole course of history. So just a play as simple as that, just situational football like that and something for a rookie to be doing, which is great to see.
And that's something to watch because Dunlap is like leading the league since he entered the league in that stat. And Chris Jones is way up there too, to where that's like something that they can do consistently. It's like in their bag as a defense to be able to sometimes give up on a rush to get in the passing lane on purpose.
I mean, just watch it. You probably don't watch the Manning cast, but yeah. Dude, when they're like, they'll see a batted ball and they both get so angry. They're like, oh, what the? Batted ball should be illegal. That should be illegal. Like, you can just tell someone who wants complete control of everything around them and then just have it for something like that. It's like, this guy has a bad pass rush, just throws his arm up and gets lucky because it hits the ball. And now my whole grand scheme has been ruined because of this nonsense. Like, you can tell, like, a guy like Peyton or other elite quarterbacks that are wired the same way, like, they fucking hate that.
Well, this is something that I want people to think about. All right. On the Chiefs defense, they made some changes this offseason, certainly. You've got George Karlaftis. You've got Carlos Dunlap. You know, and they've recently added somebody like Brandon Williams to the mix. Obviously, a big turnover in the secondary. But generally speaking, up front, like, it's kind of the same guys. And, you know, I wouldn't say that Dunlap is better or worse than a guy like Ingram or, you know, Okafor played a bunch of snaps last year, I think, maybe. You know, we're talking about, like, they're I don't know that anything that they have done personnel wise has necessarily like moved the needle a lot up front for this defense. Same coordinator, you know, still Spags out there. Haven't changed what they're doing. And yet we do have a new defensive line coach. And the guy who was doing that job, Brendan Daly, moved to the linebackers. This was done, you know, not because the Chiefs got rid of somebody, but because Matt House went and took a defensive coordinator job at a big SEC school. And I look at it and I think, you know, I don't want to say the linebackers are playing bad, but it is something that it seems like a lot of people that watch the game really closely are saying. That there's some things not going the way that, you know, you want them to at that level of the defense. And suddenly the defensive line, Chris Jones looks as good as he's ever looked. And the Chiefs are top five in sacks. And yeah, some of that's blitzing. They're getting contributions from a lot of different guys, but you know, as even Colin Saunders pointed out, if you look at the number of sacks that they have from their defensive line, it's more than teams like Dallas, who have an excellent pass rush on paper. So, you know, I think that Joe Cullen has been a really big addition for this team, and I'm starting to wonder if Brendan Daly needs to be let go. Because this is a guy that was not getting what you wanted out of the defensive line, and you're now not getting what you want out of the investment that you've made at linebacker. And he was brought here from New England with a lot of kind of hoopla.
Yeah.
Because he had, you know, Trey Flowers had like the 17 sack year, and then he went to Detroit and was never heard from again. And so it was kind of like they didn't invest a lot in their defensive line. And Daly got a lot out of what they had, but he was coaching under Bill Belichick. So
exactly. I mean, it's hiring a Andy Reid offensive coordinator. Like, what the hell are you going to get?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think you know, that Doug Peterson is a good coach. Just to kind of play devil's advocate on that one, but at the very least, like I look at it and I'm like, I don't know that Brendan Daly is a guy that I want to see continue coaching, because it seems like, to me, I feel like the defensive line has at times been an actual difference maker. And the only thing that feels very different is that they have a new coach there.
I don't know. I mean, you're not wrong. And it's kind of, you know, if this season turns all the way around, Chiefs win the Super Bowl again. Like, I think, you know, look at what will be, you know, the reasons why. Well, they traded Tyreek Hill away and still made it work. Like, they made it work without one of the top weapons. And then I think number two, you're going to look where they finished in sacks in 2021 and look where they finished in sacks in 2022. That's the biggest difference, certainly on the defense. Mm-hmm. Just statistically looking at everything else. I mean, they're horrible in sacks last year, and now they're hovering around fourth. I'm not sure where they are this week. But that's a huge one season turnaround. And if, you know, if the team gets to where we hope they will, that will be one of the big reasons why. So yeah, I mean, that defensive line changing that. And then as far as the linebackers, it just seems like when they're attacking, they look great. Mm-hmm. And if they're sitting back and thinking, like, they just don't stand a chance. Like and I know that's oversimplifying it. I know just saying it, that's oversimplifying it, because you can't just have your linebackers attack every single play, or can you? But you know, that's the observation, because when they're attacking the line of scrimmage and Bolton's making plays behind the line, I mean, he's got all these tackles for losses. I know he's near the league lead in that. So if he's, it just seems like if he's has like a one track path, he's like, okay, just go attack the running back no matter what. Then he's great. But if he has to sit back and like, okay, now you got to read run or pass. And it's, you know, if it's pass, you got to play this zone, but don't fall for play action fake and all this. And then it's just like, now he's sitting back and running away from running backs and getting eaten up in blocks. And it seems like that. So I don't know how you fix that, but you know, I guess the first thing I look at is coaching.
So I wonder a little bit when I think about the player, because like at the end of the day, like coaches can't be on the field. You know, and I think that a lot of times we want to try to figure out who we're mad at or who is at fault for something. And that is a dangerous game to play when there's so many different things that are going on, and particularly a number of things that we don't actually know.
That's why the game is so popular, because of how dangerous it is.
Right. But like I look at a guy like Nick Bolton, and it's like what you said could be summarized as he's a bad processor. Like he's not processing the game when it's an RPO or something. He's not able to sift through all the different things he's supposed to do fast enough to make a play. That could be the way that people read what you said. It could also be that, like, hey, if you tell me exactly what to do, if I'm supposed to go get the running back, I can do that well. If I'm supposed to drop back in coverage, I can do that. Okay. but like, it's the him having to decide in the flow of the game with all the misdirection and play action and everything else that's happening. If that's where he's being slowed down, it might be inexperience. I mean, he is a first year starting middle linebacker, communicator, radio in the helmet. You know, there's a lot that he's thinking about and trying to get everybody else lined up and all that other stuff. Like, it's a lot for a second year player. You know, but it's like there, I have seen enough of the, I don't know if you're running or not, and there's an offensive lineman coming at me and I'm backpedaling away from a running back. And it's like, he's just, there are times where he just doesn't play downhill because it's almost like he doesn't know if he's supposed to. And I don't think that means that he doesn't know his playbook or anything like that. It's just, there might just be a lot going on. And Nick Bolton, you know, he may not be the all pro that people want him to be, but he is a very good linebacker. I don't think that he brings like more bad than good to the table. There's just ways that he struggles, and Spags is going to have to figure out how to scheme around that. And it may ultimately mean, you know, getting a different coach, because I think that like what Colin has done with that defensive line, the defensive line feels more aggressive, more active to me. And I don't know if that's more bodies or what, but I mean, they even lost a guy in Wharton that was playing well and has been good for this team. A person that like you don't want to lose. And they've just continued to show up. So, you know, kudos to the defense. I did see a stat about before and after, I think, the bye. And the defense was like, you know, bottom eight or so in DVOA. And since the bye, they're like middle of the pack, pretty much where you want them to be. So that's good. They are getting better. Now, on the offensive side of the ball, another area of concern throughout the season at different points that seems to be rounding into form, at least based on certain metrics. Orlando Brown is not been as much of a problem over the last few weeks as he was earlier in the season. And I think we talked about this maybe on both the offense and defensive sides that like, well, the backstretch of this schedule is pretty weak. And so even if the scores have been close, it seems like maybe some of these players individually playing against lesser talent are giving you better performances. I mean, do you feel like you're complaining less or seeing less of, wow, Orlando Brown just got completely whooped on this play?
Well, I mean, the worst thing we've seen from Orlando Brown was the big play against the Bengals. You know, and that's, and that was only four games ago. So I don't know. It's part of it's kind of like that one play kind of overshines a lot of everything else. It's kind of like, you know, the primetime game in the season, like, you know, going for MVP and like, say like Joe Burrow has a big game against the Bills next week. It's going to go a long ways because it's on primetime and everyone's seeing it. And it's just like, everyone's writing articles about it and that kind of stuff. It's kind of the same way at the end of the game where, you know, one bad snap against a three-man rush where you should not lose that. everybody's going to remember that. And that ends up being the final offensive play for the team that day. So I think that does kind of outshine. But I don't, the Orlando Brown stats are just all over the fucking place. Like, he was top two in pressures allowed for the season. I mean, that's not a fake stat or anything. That was a real stat that was going around. And then you see over the last 5 weeks, he's graded out as the best tackle in the NFL. It's just like, I don't understand what's going on with Orlando Brown.
Yeah.
I'm not too hyped about paying him. I mean, if there are questions, I don't want to just throw him the bag. You know, I'd be fine with franchising tagging him, I guess, to just give us another year to figure it out. But if there are questions about this guy, which I do have questions about him, I'm not in a hurry to pay him what he wants to get paid. And, you know, people say we do throw tons of help like at the tackles as well. Like, we're always chipping and keeping running backs in the block kind of thing. So even with that, even with getting the help, still allowing that many pressures. So I have questions, but I don't know. Every single fucking stat I see about Orlando Brown just opposes the last stat I saw about Orlando Brown. And I have no fucking clue if he's good or not. I have no fucking clue. Just ask Mahomes. If Mahomes likes him, then we're fine. If not, so... just let him, you know, negotiate the deal. Put Mahomes in the room. Like,
right.
Oh, no, we ain't paying you that. Look at this. Look at this snap against the Bengals.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, I think the best way to think about Orlando Brown, and ultimately where the Chiefs are going to be, you know, having to make a choice, a big choice, an expensive choice, one way or another. I think that Orlando Brown, as the left tackle, the way that this team is constructed, that you can afford to pay Orlando Brown a lot of money. And it's important to have someone at that position that you trust.
Yes. You do not want an inexperienced left tackle with Patrick Mahomes. Right?
And it seems like, in terms of what the Chiefs want, I think from Orlando Brown, which is, don't be like a total liability, be a good locker room guy, be a good community guy, whatever. Like, he and Pat are really close, apparently. I mean, that's the talk.
Oh, yeah. Wait, all right. Okay, scrap my idea. We don't want him in the negotiator room. I don't like that idea anymore. Like, I forgot they were like best buds.
I think they're like, you know, they've gotten close. Orlando Brown, good, you know, well-spoken, intelligent guy, hard worker, you know, played in college with Creed, and like, it, you know, there's a bunch of different things that are all going his way. I would say that Orlando Brown is like a B left tackle, right? And he might be like a B minus, you know, might have some C minus days in him. But like, he's totally fine. I don't think that, like, although they have probably lost some games technically because of Orlando Brown. I mean, you just point out the last offensive play against the Bengals. He's not a guy that is like really, really, really gonna get you beat. I don't think he's not a losing left tackle. The problem that the Chiefs are gonna run into, though, is that a lot of guys like that, especially just because of the way the market works, he's a B player that is going to get paid A money. And when you have a quarterback that makes A plus 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 money, I don't think that you want to overpay anybody. You want to get like the real value for that player. And I think Orlando Brown is going to be a big test for Veach, because, you know, they decided this is too much for Tyreek Hill. All right. And I don't think that any left tackle is more important than Tyreek Hill. I don't care if it's Trent Williams. All right. They're not as good as Tyreek. And so if the Chiefs have a
little, I mean, just look at the Bengals thing. That was the Bengals draft debate for, I mean, months was, do we take Jamar Chase or do we take
Penei Sewell?
Penei Sewell.
And they've both been great. I don't think either team is upset about the choice.
But especially not the Bengals, I guess. I mean,
sure.
They got the weapon. He's already paid off to an immense, like, a receiver just has a chance to have more value than a left tackle, I think.
Yeah. But I look at it and it's like, you know, I think if the Chiefs had to come down to, let's say, give Chris Jones an extension or give Orlando Brown an extension, even knowing that Brown is probably 2 years younger than Jones, Chris Jones is an A player that deserves an A contract. And Orlando Brown is a B player that does not deserve an A contract. And I think it's going to be a very tough negotiation. And so it might just be like the Chiefs might find themselves at a point where it's like, it's not worth it, man. Like, it's just not worth it. And you know, we don't need to talk about like what that might mean. I do think it's important that he's playing, it seems like, his best football at the end of the year, which is what happened last year as well. Really until the Bengals game, he had a tough game against the Bengals in the playoffs last year as well. So I don't know if it's just Trey Hendrickson and Sam Hubbard. I don't know if it's Lou Anarumo.
Hey, Lou.
But you know, I do think that if anything, like as far as a positive sign on that offensive line, Trey Smith is certainly back to form, and he had a rough stretch early in the season that we were all speculating it was the foot injury. But my God, man, every week he is just like wiping guys completely out of the frame. That guy is as fun to watch as maybe any player not named Patrick Mahomes. And he even has, he's got a pretty impressive highlight tape. All right. Like Trey Smith, a lot of fun, a lot of fun.
More fun than Justin Watson.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Definitely.
Any read on the Justin Watson? That's probably the biggest topic going around the Chiefs universe, I would say.
It's Mahomes' fault. He likes him. Pat likes him.
Well, he's
Justin Watson, the new Garrick Dieter, but he gets snaps because he's taller and faster.
But, well, he's breaking the cardinal rule of being a white wide receiver, which is you don't drop passes. That's, I mean, put that in stone. And he's breaking that. I think he's up to, I don't know, 3 or 4 drops the last couple of weeks, but it's just him getting the snaps, Sky Moore not getting the snaps. They're not the same player really whatsoever. So I think they're kind of playing different roles, but I don't know. Does this continue? Is Justin Watson the wide receiver 2 in a playoff game? Do you think that happens?
I don't think it can, you know, unless they're dealing with some major injuries. I would like to think that in a playoff game, especially with McColl back, that there's just no way Justin Watson is getting the number of snaps that he has been. Now, is he a guy that they feel like they know he's gonna go to the right spot and run the right route and do the timing and give you occasionally a shot to make a good play? Yeah. But they've also seen, especially over the last 2 weeks, that he might have some lapses in concentration and not catch the football. I don't know if the Chiefs have a number 2 wide receiver, as long as they are, you know, slow playing Kadarius Toney, and using the combination of he and McColl the way that they do. I mean, the person that it seems like they're underutilizing is Sky Moore. That's like where I think everybody is falling. MVS is just so hot and cold.
His catch against Houston, though, that touchdown catch, that was remarkable. Just full layout, mm-hmm. like diving away from the way he was running. I could not believe he caught that. And then it's kind of a Dwayne Bowe syndrome where he like makes the impossible catches, but then the ones that are right in his hands, he can't reel in. That was nonstop with Dwayne Bowe over the years, making some of the most ridiculous catches you'll ever see. And then
the MVS Dwayne Bowe comparisons are so offensive. They're so offensive. I get that, you know, sometimes the routine was not always routine.
It's a specific trade. It's not a production thing.
Thank you.
But he should be the second receiver. And all I mean, looking at these snaps over the year, I mean, it was basically 3 set receivers until McColl Hardman got hurt. And Watson really wasn't seeing the field, and it was MVS and Juju, and then McColl, and then Sky Moore kind of splitting snaps with Hardman, and then McColl gets hurt, and all of a sudden Watson just gets thrust into being one of these top receivers. So he's almost like the McColl Hardman fill-in. Why that is, I don't know. I mean, if McColl Hardman can do it, why couldn't Sky Moore do it? I guess would be my question. I don't know. I don't get it. I get that they trust him, and that's got to be issue number one. So I don't know if you just want to overlook these drops and just hope that he figures it out or change something up, or maybe McColl Hardman coming back will take these snaps away and they'll just kind of shift over to him.
I mean, I think that there's a possibility. I hate how reluctant I am to even discuss it, but like, there's a chance that McColl is just flat out better than a lot of those guys, MVS, Justin Watson, Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore, that like, he's just a better player. It might also be that like, he's the only receiver that's been on the team for multiple years and he's been here for four, you know, this is year four. And so it's like, there might just be some things in there with him that even though Chiefs fans have, maybe even coming into this season, we're like, well, this is McColl's last year here. Like, they've been saying their goodbyes for a while. But maybe he's just way more important than we want to, you know, give credit for. And is he a, you know, perfect receiver? No. You know, he might be the Willie Gay of the offense a little bit, in that when McColl's really popping, so is this offense. I mean,
he's definitely the least trusted. He's definitely, if you ask him, who he's had the
tracks,
most, yeah, he's had the most headaches with, it's got to be McColl, 100%.
Watson, like, he's probably the most potentially special of the skill sets. I mean, we haven't seen enough of Sky Moore to know, but McColl also like is only fast and sort of shifty, but like he's not winning jump balls. In fact, no, he's never going for a jump ball ever.
No, I mean, you're not taking like covered shots to him, but he does get open deep. I mean, he isn't just like he does a lot of stuff around the line of scrimmage, but he also catches balls downfield getting open. Mm-hmm. He's just quick in that way. I mean, it just seems like Watson is, I even had to check, like, has he been here multiple years, like on the practice squad or something? But no, this is his first year here. No,
they signed
him. He's essentially been here the exact same amount of time as Sky Moore. So it's just, I don't know why, other than he's just doing his job more consistently, his job as in running the correct routes or knowing the offense or something along those lines, not necessarily catching the football. And he's doing more of that than Sky Moore is. And maybe that's it. I don't know. I don't get it, but it's time to move away from it, I guess I would say. I kind of speculated early in the season, like maybe they're going to slow play Sky and kind of bring him on in the playoffs. I still do think that's possible. And he has shown some juice, man. That, I don't know if you remember that juke he had this week was just like, it was absurd. So, man, Sky has something in there. I'm just waiting to unleash it. I guess probably have to wait till next year. I would love to see something in the playoffs or in these next 2 weeks. This seems like the time, you know, we're talking about figuring all these things out before games get super important. This seems like the time where you'd figure Sky Moore out, unless you're either A, hiding him for the playoffs, or B, just not planning to use him down the stretch at all.
Well, let's take a look at the playoffs here. I know you had some playoff ideas or scenarios that you wanted to go over.
Just the playoff picture in general. Yeah. So, I mean, we're the 2 seed right now. We need the Bengals to beat the Bills in a game, man. I am pumped for that game. That's just going to be a fantastic game. A lot on the line for us, a lot on the line for both of those teams, like just stakes galore. A Monday night game isolated. That's going to be fantastic football. I'm very much looking forward to that. And in what is otherwise a terrible week of NFL football this week. So bad that they flexed Baltimore and Pittsburgh to Sunday night. Like that's the best game they got. So obviously getting the 1 seed is huge. I kind of want to look at like the paths of getting the 1 seed or the 2 seed. Cause I think it's pretty 50-50 at this point. I think we're kind of assuming the Chiefs will win out. And then that Bengals and Bills game just feels like a toss up to me. Or could really go either way. So if we get the 2 seed, I think we're most pretty much looking at the NFC East, or sorry, the AFC East wild card. Now that could be New England, Miami, or the Jets, but that's probably going to be the 7 seed. So that would probably be the first matchup for the Chiefs. One of those three teams. Do you have a preference between those three teams at all? Does anything jump out about those three? I know you were high on Miami a while ago, and they haven't won a football game since we did that pod. So are you still scared of Miami or anything from those three teams?
Dude, I mean, Miami does scare me. I think if you guys want like a detailed breakdown as to why that defense can be really scary, go listen to the KC Sports Network. But basically, they are very, very talented and deep on defense, which I tried to tell people. And that defense has struggled, particularly in pass coverage, because of corners this year. But their front can get after it.
Why are they talking Miami? Are they looking ahead to playoff opponents or something?
Yeah. Okay. The lab off from Monday night of this week. And you know, Maddie did a great job talking about all the different guys that they have and how trading for Bradley Chubb has changed, you know, the calculus for teams trying to attack that defense.
Yeah, they had some Jalen Phillips dude was tearing it up, and then some white dude along the like a D tackle, Solar or something like that. He was making a couple nice plays against whoever I was watching them play, Buffalo, I think.
Well, and it's, you know, if the Chiefs' weakness is in the middle of the field, that is precisely what Miami is trying to attack. You know, that could just be a nightmare matchup for Kansas City. I don't like that. I don't like that one bit. Say that again.
Sealer was his name.
Sealer.
Sealer was just making a few plays.
Who are the other two teams you were talking about?
Well, it's all AFC East, so it's Patriots, Dolphins, and Jets look like the most likely to get the 7 seed. It's between those three, and they all kind of play each other coming down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, the Patriots, I think we would walk through. And I think
yeah, I there's want the a Patriots. Chance
they could do that against the Jets, too. The Jets' defense is their strength, and it's not good enough to give them room to score enough points to beat Patrick Mahomes. I just don't see that happening.
Although
on the road at Arrowhead, like, no, I don't think so.
Well, I mean, we're going to be big favorites against any of them. But Mike White kind of changes that a little bit. I mean, they've been winning games with Zach Wilson most of the year, and he's god awful. So if Mike White can just be like average, I think they're a pretty scary team. The Dolphins, I mean, the weird thing about the Dolphins was like, can Tua do it in cold weather? And he's been awful down the stretch, other than the cold weather game that he played in Buffalo, where he was actually pretty good against a good defense. So that was kind of weird. New England seems like the easiest. You know, Belichick looms, obviously. But I think I would pick New England out of any of those teams. I don't know. I'm kind of scared of the Jets. Or not scared. I think I'd pick the Jets as the least team I'd least like to play. Playing Miami is a lot of fun because Tyreek versus... Ooh, that's kind of scary, man. I don't know. I don't like how, motivated Tyreek.
How would the
motivated Tyreek?
How would the crowd respond to Tyreek? Like, I think he would probably be booed heartily. And I think that it is a little unjust. Tyreek said a bunch of things about Tua, and to me, it seems like at this point, now that we can kind of look back, it really seems like it was Mike McDaniel being like, hey, we need to build Tua up because he's been so broken mentally. And so, like, just say good things about him. Just do that. And Tyreek is, he's the most accurate QB in the league. And I love him. And I'm so excited about what we can do and whatever. And, like, we've seen the highs of it. But, like, I don't, you know, and Tyreek was building up, whatever. Like, he doesn't actually believe that Tua is better than Patrick Mahomes. Nobody does. I was thinking about, like, under what circumstances would Tyreek's name be chanted at Arrowhead again? I was like, could he like go out there and like line up for a punt and the Chiefs are up by 3 scores and it doesn't matter and the Dolphins are trying to come back and like the fans are just start chanting Tyreek? Sure, man.
Drunken super chanting Tyreek.
I don't know. Like, I mean,
well, how about ironically, if Tyreek is the one that fucks up, and then you're chanting Tyreek to get in his head, Tyreek fumbles the ball or something, and the whole stadium's chanting Tyreek. That's kind of cold, kind of chilly. I don't know. It being a playoff game kind of changes the equation a little bit. You know, regular season game, I could see cheering them. I also don't know what would you get introduced before. Do they introduce offensive starters?
They don't introduce individual players for the other team. They just will say, here come the Miami Dolphins or whatever.
Yeah, so I mean, your first chance will be what? Like when he catches a pass for the first time? It's already, the game's already on at that point, so there wouldn't be any cheering. I can promise you that. There'd probably be boos, but you know, I don't know if there's hard feelings, really, whatever. If he would just stop talking, he would be beloved. Just stop talking. But I don't know, he's fun, he's having a fun time. I don't hold too many grudges, although when he says things, I'm like, dude, that's really dumb. Just quit talking.
I do think that Miami is clearly the best team of the three. They're the best team.
I'll go with the Jets just to be a little contrarian here.
Okay.
That's with the 2 seed. So then you'd probably play the 3 seed. And if we get the 2 seed, this would be assuming Cincinnati lost. So we'd be playing Cincinnati again, coming into Arrowhead in the divisional round. And then we'd be looking at going to Buffalo for the championship game. You know, obviously this is all contingent on a lot of things. But this is the most likely path. If we are the 2 seed, playing the AFC East wild card, playing Cincinnati at home in Arrowhead, and then going to Buffalo, which is a pretty tough path, I guess. You know, you're going to be 7-8 point favorites at home against AFC East team. You're going to be 3-4 point favorites against Cincinnati coming here. And then Buffalo, you're going to be an underdog going there. But you know, but I'm kind of with you. I mean, I was talking Buffalo up as much as a month ago, and man, they just every week they just fail to impress. Like the last time they impressed me in a game, I mean, they beat Miami, I guess. So you got to give them props for that, I guess. But they didn't look that great, and really, they haven't looked great since beating us. Like it's just an unimpressive season, which. I will say you could probably say the same thing about them last season. And then, you know, they bring that in the playoff game. So, I mean, they did show up in that playoff game. So there is always a chance they can pull that out of their ass, but man, failing to impress for like 10 weeks here. It's a big stretch.
And I think, you know, Buffalo's move in the past has been, you know, when we're in the playoffs, it's Josh Allen time. It's Josh is going to run it, you know, 8 designed runs and another 6 scrambles. And it's going to be all Josh Allen all game long.
But he's been their problem. He looks bad. Yeah, like every game I watch, he looks bad.
It's his elbow. And the fact that, you know, they play, we've talked about it. Like it's not sustainable. You know, Cam Newton, all the pounding that he took, and then he couldn't throw the ball anymore. And I think that there's a chance that you're starting to see that a little bit with Josh Allen. I think the way that the teams are playing, it feels to me, like the Bengals are gonna win on Monday, and put the Chiefs into the 1 seed. The Bengals right now, I think, are playing the best football of anybody, anywhere. They feel like to me the last probably 5-6 weeks the best team in the league, just the way that they're performing. And so I think that they're going to beat Buffalo, and I think that the Chiefs will sneak into the 1 seed with some help from the Bengals.
Okay, so let's look at the 1 seed path. So I kind of agree with you. I would favor the Bengals in this one. I would pick them. So the 1 seed path. So you get the bye week, obviously. And then so in that divisional round, you're kind of looking at, I'm looking at it like, okay, 4 seed's either going to be Jacksonville or Tennessee. I think it'll be Jacksonville. The 5 seed is probably going to be the Chargers because they have an easy schedule the rest of the way out. They play the Rams and Broncos. So if they win both of those, and Baltimore still has to play Cincinnati, which should be playing for something, or they'll be playing for the division title, actually. So that'll be a big game. And Cincinnati just looks way better than Baltimore right now. We have no idea if Lamar Jackson is going to play or not. Obviously, if he doesn't play, you'd do anything you could to draw Baltimore. If he comes back, Baltimore seems super scary because their defense is like turning it on now. Like they're allowing close to 10 points every single week, it seems like. So if they could just get Lamar back in the fold, they're super scary. But nobody, they're not speaking about Lamar Jackson. Nobody has any idea what he's going to do. So they probably, Baltimore probably slides down to that 6 seed. Chargers slide up to that 5 seed is what I'm looking like. So you're kind of looking at like a Chargers, Ravens, Jaguars. So if you're the 1 seed, you take the lowest seed who wins. So it could be any number of teams. I would say the most likely team is the Chargers, who I want to talk about, who are now, you know, almost kind of got written off for most of the season because of all their injuries. I didn't think there was any chance of Rashawn Slater coming back, their left tackle. Now they're talking about him coming back. He had a biceps injury. Nobody ever comes back from that. They're also talking about Joey Bosa coming back. Derwin James is back in the fold. Both their receivers are back in the fold. This is all of a sudden a very scary team getting all of their talent back and winning here down the stretch, and a team that always plays the Chiefs close. You know, so, I mean, I get it that the Chiefs always pull these out. They've beaten the Chargers numerous times in a row now, but I don't want a chance of 3-point game, you know, in a playoff game, you know? So I think the Chargers are looking very scary all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean, because of the familiarity and the way that team is built, yeah, it's a tough matchup. It's a tough matchup. It's a team that I don't want to play if we don't have to. But ultimately, I think that the only team in the field, really, that gives me true heebie-jeebies is those Bengals. So, I mean, maybe it's better to, you know, anybody would say it's better to get a bye. That is, I think, an obvious advantage that the Chiefs would like to be able to have. But
you can't draw the Steelers this year. Although maybe the Patriots are the Steelers of last year. That might be.
I just, anything to put off the Bengals as long as possible is probably what a lot of fans are wanting. I want to play them. I want the Bengals before this season is said and done. I want to play them again. If that game doesn't happen for one reason or another, I'll probably be a little bummed out. I want to play the Bengals again.
Well, then you should want the 2 seed because that's the most surest way to play the Bengals. Right. But, you know, so the 1 seed, you're looking at playing, you know, Chargers and then having the Bengals and Bills battle it out again on the other side and then playing the winner of that one at home. So you're mostly like, if 1 seed, you're getting the bye, you're getting the Chargers, and then you're getting either the Bengals or the Bills at home. 2 seed, you have to play the wild card round against an AFC East team. You get Cincy at home and then have to go on the road to Buffalo. You have to play both of the top tier teams in the AFC. So that's just kind of what's at stake. And most of this is just going to come down to that Buffalo Cincinnati game. And then the Chiefs closing it out, winning against the Broncos and at the Raiders, who are both floundering. But that's pretty much the stretch there of what we're looking at in the AFC. Yeah, not too many other closing thoughts here. What do you think? That kind of lays it all out, I guess.
Yeah. I will say I'm not enthusiastic about playing a team that just fired their coach.
Ah.
They couldn't just wait another week or two or have
not,
done
not after that
a week or two or seven ago.
Can you just imagine, you know, you're a Denver Broncos fan, you're living in LA. Oh man, yes, we're coming to LA this year. We're playing the Rams. Coming off a Super Bowl win. This is gonna be a great year. This is gonna be a great game. We're going to spend Christmas Day watching this game. You go to that game with your family. The teams are terrible. Okay, we sucked, but we're still going. We're going to go watch this game. And then you're down 31-3 in the second quarter to a 4-10 football team. And that's your Christmas Day. Sorry, kids. This is your Christmas Day. I mean, that just seems so pathetic. I can't I would feel bad for the Broncos fans, but they're Broncos fans, so fuck them. They deserve it. So I couldn't stop thinking about that while watching that. I enjoyed this whole second half, even though it's a blowout football game. I'm just sitting there like, this is enjoyable. I'm thinking about all the Broncos fans who have cheered our pain and misery over the years. And this is, you know, making me feel good. It's giving me the Christmas spirit.
I think that BJ was saying that, like, what his real route for chaos is for the Broncos to sign Baker this offseason so that they have a quarterback room of Russell Wilson and Baker Mayfield next year. Be a little combustible. Well, yeah. I mean, we're gonna play a bad football team on Sunday. And I'm excited about, is it on Sunday or is it on Saturday? Are they doing Saturday again?
Fuck about them.
I mean, it really threw a wrench in everything. I was just assuming it was Sunday. No,
It's Sunday.
Okay, cool.
A whole 10 a.m. New Year's Day kickoff.
There we go.
Get pumped. A couple things. Chiefs long-term runs. Just want to pay homage to the Chiefs and the things that they're doing over an elongated stretch here. Seven straight divisions. I think that happened while we were off. That happened when the Texans win. Just an impressive streak that I don't think enough about is that that's the second longest division win streak of all time.
Or as Nick Wright told us, the tied for the longest if you don't include cheaters.
Directly in Eric Mangini's face, unveils the banner, and then just kind of turns around. What do you think about that, coach? And Mangini taking it well, just has a good chuckle about it. But that's incredible. I mean, this is just the second longest streak of all time. It's just all those powerhouse teams to never have done that. That's pretty incredible. And then the five straight 12-win seasons, only the third team to ever do that. I think it's the Patriots and the Colts in the 2000s. So they're in that company now. And then the Mahomes stat, where he's thrown for 4,500 yards and 35 touchdowns. He's now done it four times, which is four of the five seasons he's played. I guess he didn't do it 2019 because he got hurt, probably. So he won a Super Bowl that year. Not too bad. And that is tied with Peyton and Breeze for the second most of all time and only one behind Tom Brady. Each of those guys played 15 to 20 to... Fuck, how many years has Brady played? 25 now? So Mahomes is only one behind the all-time lead there. That's pretty incredible. And those are the big stats that I want to pay homage to because we need to appreciate the greatness of what the Chiefs are doing as much as we can. We need to enjoy this ride while we have it.
Also, thoroughly enjoyed that they had Mitch bang the drum before the game. Awesome. Good for him. That's the first time he's done it, which almost sounded surprising to me. Like, oh, he's never done that before. But that's pretty awesome that they got that worked out. And yeah, you know, the Chiefs are fun.
Oh, and we never talked about Chiefsaholic.
Oh my
God. I think everybody knows the story by this point. We kind of missed the window on, you know, making our jokes, although we did make our jokes about it. That's one of the funner things. For it to happen to multiple super fans. I love how it reaches the national level. That's fantastic. But I do want to I want to pay homage to a new hero who has emerged. A big-bellied boy who is drinking beer from a boot in the top level of Chiefs games. He's shirtless also. I love this guy. I kind of want to call him. I was thinking of a nickname, you know, on the fly right before we started. I was thinking... Boot Hooch and Boogie is maybe a nickname for this guy. But one of the best things, so I was kind of going through a rabbit hole deep last night. This would be the only deep dive that I did. It wasn't his boot that he drank from. There's a video of him politely taking the boot from another fan. And it's literally him like on the ground taking the boot off the guy, like untying it and then carefully removing it. That's the boot he drinks from. Just some random guy's boot. That's pretty weird. And then there was also another video of him doing it in Tampa Bay, shirtless, drinking from a boot. And so he's done it multiple times this year. So I think this might be our new guy that we can rally behind and, you know, support him until he's in jail in 18 months.
All right. So he's drinking from actual boots, not a glass boot. Real human boots.
Correct. It's like a combat boot.
Okay. And you say he's big belly guy?
Big belly boy.
Okay.
Not belly boy of 90s lore.
Right.
Love the belly boy. Mm-hmm. Don't want to cross paths here. Don't want to cross our streams. No, it's this guy's young. He's young, and he's either wearing a Creed jersey or he's with a guy who wears a Creed jersey. He kind of looks like Creed Humphrey. He might be related. We'll keep looking into this.
Okay.
For playoff time here, but I love this guy. I'm all about this guy.
My initial guess, not having seen any of this, but just interpreting the signs, heavy set guy, drinking beer out of other people's shoes.
Yes.
I think it's Rex Ryan. I think it's Rex Ryan. Who is Rex Ryan?
He doesn't quite have the hair. He has more of a Sam Mellinger pumpkin pie haircutted freak haircut going on. But
you just say he's young, so you know.
Anybody. He's got a lot of potential, man. He's like one of our rookie corners. Like, you know, he's not top tier right now, but you know, this guy's a rookie and he's showing a lot of promise. And so, like 3 and 4 years from now, this guy will probably be down the lower level due to his fame. And maybe he'll be drinking out of other things. Like we can get him some other things to drink out of that nobody else wants to touch. Like maybe like out of the urinal or something. No,
not touching that.
Not
touching that. I don't want the next Chiefs super fan to turn into like dares at the middle school lunch table. What will he drink out of next, folks? I mean, it is a shtick, but it's not one that I want to support, really.
I mean, drinking out of a shoe, how much grosser is it to drink out of somebody else's shoe?
I think about all of the aspects of this. I don't even know the person whose shoe I'm drinking out of. That person having to put the shoe back on.
What the fuck, bro?
In like 10 degrees on Saturday. That kind of stuff, I'm just like, there's no, I don't want to be involved in any of that. I mean, I'm not trying to shoot down the new maybe startup super fan. This is like,
well, he's a super fan. He has to do things that regular fans aren't capable of. He has to have a superpower. This is a superpower.
And so he's like, is it like when Hulk is hulking?
That's it.
And he hypes himself up and then he drinks from a boot.
Yeah, we need a score like when he drinks it and then the score after he drinks it. See if it like a momentum thing. I mean, he did it against Tampa Bay and he did it this week. So, I mean, those were two games where we looked really good. Two blowouts for this year. So if I had to guess, he was probably at San Francisco game doing it there too.
Okay.
That's just my guess.
All right, folks, this has been Amateur Hour. I'm Ryan Scott Hall. He is his darkness. Let's beat the Broncos. Go Chiefs.
Fuck them. Fuck them up.
Who the best?
Go Jordan.